Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Oh, very well. Thank you, Andrew. And yourself? Beautiful weather in London, as usual.
It's okay. It's okay. The motivation was being in South Spain the previous week when we weren't able to tape, when it was kind of 17 degrees and cloudy, raining. But anyway, it was very nice to get away. So, but your background is very lovely, so that would be actually a nice place for us to be actually conducting this.
Looks like Jackson Hole.
Yes, exactly. So, obviously, let's quickly timestamp, because I think there's obviously a lot of stuff going on. So right now it's Friday, April 17th at 2:45 London time, where there's just been a bunch of announcements about Trump saying that there could be a cash for enriched uranium as part of a deal with Iran. Then Iran said, I think they're saying Strait of Hormuz, from at least from their standpoint, is open. So that's just to give, you know, everyone, you know, obviously the dollar's selling off, interest rates are rallying, oil selling off, equities, I guess, are kind of rallying somewhat. So let's just start off. Obviously, there's other stuff that's gone on. You know, so what's your big take? Let's start with what's your big takeaway this past week?
So it's all about the war, but more than the war, it's all about how many tankers are getting through the Strait of Hormuz. We don't know for sure, but the numbers are still low. So that's, you know, that's what I'm razor focused on. Obviously, then you have the statement from the belligerent, and the last statement from Iranian Foreign Minister Araghchi was very interesting, not just because of the strong market reaction, but also I think on the part of the Iranian, it's an attempt to steer the US in the direction of full opening of the strait. It's, you know, it's unclear how tight the blockade is. And as you know, Truth is the first casualty of war. But for sure, it's not normal conditions. So I think that by creating this very positive market reaction, the Iranian side has made it more costly for the US to resume the war when the ceasefire expires on Tuesday. And I know the market has taken a very positive slant to the news, but, you know, and we have ourselves LLM index of President Trump hawkishness that we publish daily, and it shows President Trump turning more dovish. But on the other hand, you have Secretary of War Hegseth making all these hawkish noises. So there is a bit of a good cop, bad cop play going on here. And I think what the Iranians are trying to do is to really push us in the direction of, you know, ending the blockade by making it more costly not to, or to launch another attack. There are people who I respect to say, based on the buildup of military US forces in the Gulf, that President Trump could launch a big attack at the expiration of the ceasefire. So my view is, I agree with the market. We've moved in the direction of a positive outcome. But two things, it's in terms of probabilities. I see the probabilities more like 55 than 75%. And then even if we end up with a peaceful resolution, it will take time for things to go to normal. And meanwhile, we will still have a bit of a commodities price shock.
Yep, I think that makes sense. And what do you think the Fed's thinking?
So they agree.
Obviously we don't yeah, like with what's happened like in the last hour, how do you think that they're
Okay, so their attitude has been show me the money, meaning they've been repeating all of them, hawks as much as dove, that the impact of the war will depend on how high oil prices stay and how high they go and how long they stay elevated. So like me, they are very much in talk is good, but we need to seize the real action here, the money. So they've been fairly consistent. They've been saying, so first of all, it's long-term inflation expectations that matter to us because it's basically the Fed credibility, and that they are going to be more sensitive to the risk of de-anchoring than they would have, say, before the pandemic, because inflation has been above target for more than 5 years. Other than that, they've said that for them, what's important is to limit the pass-through from energy to the core. So there is always going to be a bit of pass-through, like with transportation, which are part of core, but very energy service that's very energy intensive. But what's really interesting is that the last CPI print, so the March print, actually core was below expectations, which, by the way, Sam's model had predicted. What's really interesting is that they have been all talking about both sides of the mandate. It's another supply shock, so lift inflation lowers employment. But a hawk like Cleveland Fed President Hammack has turned less hawkish this week. Before, she had been campaigning for the Fed to provide two-sided guidance to its policies, so risk of hike. And this week, she did not. She stressed that the Fed had to look at both sides of the mandate. And I think it reflects probably this last inflation print, as well as that we see clearly that consumption is starting to get impacted by the higher inflation. So maybe it's a good segue to next week, because a key data we're getting is retail sales. And if you look, so retail sales, there are four or five definitions, but the ones that counts because it's the less volatile is the control group, and the consensus is for a 20 basis point increase. And if you deflate by the CPI, headline was 90 basis point month on month. So we have minus 70 basis point consensus real retail sales, which clearly shows the impact, the negative impact of higher inflation on consumption. The US economy is 70% consumption. So if this keeps going, we're going to get at least one quarter of ne negative growth, maybe in
Can I
Q3.
ask a quick question?
Please.
Are you surprised? Does it seem like the data, economic data out of the US is slower than it is out of Europe? Like we were kind of told that, which I think makes sense, US has energy independence. I understand there's the price of gasoline is up more because there's it's taxes are like a it's not a
Higher.
variable. So
Yeah.
yeah, so if taxes are a significant part of it and just the variable part that moves around is much smaller, then the percentage move will be smaller. But are you surprised that US economy seems to be like slowing a bit more than UK, Europe, or even Asia?
No, because one key reform over the past year has been cutting down on immigration, taking people out of the US. And the US is an immigration country. It's really the core of its economic fabric. And when you do that, you basically end up in a situation with zero job creation, which makes the economy super fragile because it means that if there is a negative shock, as we are going through right now, people who are laid off are going to find it much more difficult than in previous
Fine.
episodes to find new jobs. So we're not seeing it in the jobless claims yet, because we're still early in the process, economic time much slower than market time. You know, it takes 1 month for people to adjust, and then you can't claim unemployment right away. But we are hearing anecdotally stories about large-scale layoffs. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the coming month we started to see claims go up, initial jobless claim go up.
At the same time, is the U.S. economy showing some signs of like this manufacturing renaissance, like this re-onshoring or something, or not really?
Not really. So this was a topic of my weekly this week, and I really looked hard, and I can't. And in all, I couldn't find any strong signs of that. Though in all fairness, it's going to take more than a year. The administration has been at it for a year. Those policies take time to work. But what I think is, in the short run, the policy that's having the bigger impact is the net decrease in the workforce of the United States. I mean, Japan went through something similar, but at a much slower pace, because in Japan, it was driven by demographics, not by forcibly removing people, and you saw the impact.
They already have very low. They already have very low immigration, but okay. So you're saying it's much slower for people just being living longer and having less babies, and but in
but
general, it's the
same
kind of thing.
Same concept that labor supply goes down, and it's not pretty. That's all I'll say about it.
I don't know do you have any thoughts on this, like, idea about either to reinvest in the Gulf countries, to reinvest in their kind of local infrastructure, rebuilding, whatever, or Europe taking money back from the U.S.? Do you have a view on, like, the general flows and stuff, or?
Sure. I mean, what you say is spot on. The Gulf countries are going to have to spend to rebuild their infrastructure. Plus, their export revenues are not as high as they used to be. So there is less of a surplus. And then, the U.S. relationship with its allies have been weakened by the conflict. So for sure, there is a good chance that we are going to see a reshuffling of global saving flows. And what we have seen in terms of trade flows, with less international trade, could also happen with financial flows, that there is much less of international, of investing outside of your own countries.
Right.
So that's definitely a risk post-war.
And a quick one on the last thing, on Warsh. How's that going?
So Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, is Super Tuesday, because we have, one, the expiry of the ceasefire. Two, we have retail sales. And three, we possibly have the Warsh nomination hearing. It's unclear. It was announced last week, but yesterday the Democrats on the banking committee wrote to the chairman. So because the Republicans have a majority in the Senate, the banking committee chair, who sets the agenda, is the Republican. So they wrote to suggest this did not take place. It would have been interesting, because we would have seen what Warsh take on inflation, employment risk is at the moment, and how independent he really is, and whether he's still going to stick to his view that rates should go down massively largely because of the productivity gains caused by AI, which, by the way, all of the FOMC members recently have been not openly criticizing, but definitely dissenting. They've been saying that productivity gains do not reflect AI, and I tend to agree with them. It's too early. I think the productivity gains reflect that it's been much tougher for businesses to find workers last year because there was this discrete decrease in labor supply, never happened before in the US history. So they coped, and that
So
raised
force them to
productivity.
be more productive. So forcing
Exactly,
them to do
exactly,
more of the same with less.
exactly. And
Good
the
to,
view
yeah.
in the FOMC is that it will take quite some time for productivity gains to show up. So it would be interesting to see, was poor Mr.
Oh,
Walsh.
sorry, 1 second. Yeah.
Ah, Veltan News.
Okay, let. Can you? Sorry, just telling. Actually, on that note, maybe let's bring it to a close. But just in general, he is going to have to go in front of the Senate, and he is going to have to give his views, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's just, we're not sure it will be on Thursday because there is this issue with the lawsuit. Republican Senator Tillis, who is retiring at the end of the year, said that he will block Walsh's nomination until the lawsuit against Chair Powell is dropped. And the lawsuit is not being dropped. In fact, the Department of Justice on Wednesday sent two criminal prosecutors and an investigator to the construction site of the Fed, and they were turned down, of course. But that thing is not going to get resolved, the lawsuit, anytime soon. I think it will get resolved after the midterm, if, as prediction markets expect, the Republicans lose. Then I think President Trump will drop the lawsuit and we will have a lame duck
He's
appointment
gonna,
for Walsh.
yeah. Okay, cool, awesome. All right, sorry. Let me hop on this. But this was awesome as always, and yeah. Looking for have a great weekend. Wish all of our clients have a great weekend as well.
Yeah, good luck, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.